From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. You'll know my next guest, Clint Van Zandt, is a retired FBI agent, author, safety expert, and one of the people behind Silent Bodyguard. It's a life-saving iPhone and BlackBerry app, and it is now free at iTunes and through livesecure.org. And it's something that, we always talk about that app, how important it is, yet we have to talk about stories like that of the death of the California teenager Norma Lopez, Clint, and the hunt is on for her killer, and you can read more about that at newsvine.com, where Clint writes an article on that. We'll have a link in the show notes. How are you, sir?
Hey, good evening, Dana. Good to be with you.
Boy, I wish Norma Lopez had Silent Bodyguard. It's another tragedy. We don't know what's going on yet. There's a lot of forensics involved in this case, I'm sure. A young girl walking home from school, summer school, actually takes a shortcut, and I'll let you take the story from there.
Yeah, it is. You know, as far as Silent Bodyguard, I wish I could have given it to her. I wish I could give it to everybody in the country. In fact, now we've figured out a way to give it away for free, working with others. So at iTunes or through, livesecure.org, one can get that. And as you know, with Silent Bodyguard, once you load it, you push one button and it sends either email or text messages that says you're in trouble. And every 60 seconds, it updates your exact GPS location. And, you know, as an FBI agent working kidnappings, boy, I would have loved to have had that as opposed to somebody snatched my child off the street. I don't know which way they went. In the case of Norma Lopez, which is, what brings us here again, we've got this lovely young woman, had one more time somebody with her whole entire life out in front of her. She's attending summer school, and then she's simply going to walk home, or in this case, go to her friend's house and meet her sister. And she takes a shortcut, Dana, that everybody knows. You cut through this empty field, and the upside and downside is it is a shortcut, but the downside is if you're not walking with somebody else, you're really out there by yourself. And if somebody had been stalking her, if it was a predator who was just looking for a target of opportunity, that would be the type of location you would go to, whether it was Norma Lopez and you knew perhaps she used this, or whether you knew other young women use this cut-through as a way, too. And it brings us, full circle back again, Dana, to, what Tom Cruise, the actor, taught us in the movie Top Gun, which was never leave your wingman. And I guess that is really the case for anyone, for adults or anybody. But, for young women in a case like this, too, or young men, you should always travel at least in twos or threes. And if you get out by yourself, just like the a lion on the Serengeti is looking for that gazelle that he can cut away from a herd and attack, many times if you're out by yourself, a predator sees that, they can attack you. In this case, we know that Norma Lopez was attacked. It appears that she fought for her life against one or more offenders. Evidence of her being attacked and kidnapped were found by her sister within a few hours of her disappearance. But, Dana, it took almost 5 days for her remains to be found, and in that sweltering temperature, West Coast temperature, after 5 days, they had a hard time even telling the sex of the victim, much less that it was Norma Lopez, until they can confirm by dental records and DNA. Now the challenge, of course, is we've lost this young woman, but who did it? Was it a chance opportunity by a predator? Was she targeted by a gang? Was it gangbangers that were looking for someone, sometimes maybe even an initiation rite, to do something terrible like this? And the bottom line is, if this could happen to Norma Lopez, it can happen to any young woman out there. And I think that's why parents are basically terrorized in that area because they realize a killer or killers are out there, especially when law enforcement, Dana, has indicated that Norma Lopez's remains were found in an area where the body of another victim was found within the last year. So does that suggest perhaps it could be a dumping ground for an offender, a multiple offender, and at worst, even a serial killer?
Clint Van Zandt here. Now, we're talking Moreno Valley, which is about 60 miles east of L.A. Of course, a huge melting pot for sex offenders. Have they looked at in this area how many sex offenders are in their vicinity?
Well, it was interesting. The high school where she was attending summer school classes, within two blocks of her high school or something like 15 or 20 registered sex offenders. Okay. You know, there are laws that say they're not even supposed to live close to a school, much less to be anywhere they could have contact with a young, you know, a young woman like this. So I think that's the challenge. That was my experience, Dana, as an FBI agent. Whenever we'd have a missing child or a kidnapping case, we would go look at records of known sex offenders, those that have been released from jail recently. And it seemed like every rock you turned over, there was a predator under that rock, that there were literally dozens of sex offenders that we had to go out, identify, find out where they were that day. And the challenge is that a significant percentage of sex offenders, at least in the United States, are out of compliance. In essence, they haven't notified local law enforcement where they live, what they're doing. They've moved and haven't provided that information, and that's the challenge right now.
You know, and when we talk about that, we go back to the Gardner case, which you and I talked about many times,
sure.
John Albert Gardner, and the whole aspect of these sex offenders, and you made a good point about living near schools, you know, they get put on the registry, and then after that, they pretty much run wild because there are not enough people to check up on them, or those that are checking up on them aren't doing the job properly.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, too. It's just trying to identify who these individuals are and trying to be able to pin them down in one location. You know, this was also the case in the case of J.C. Dugard,
right.
The young woman in California who was kidnapped and held for, as you know, for 19 years. She was taken by a known sex offender, and in that case, parole officers had been by allegedly checking on him and had simply not walked in the backyard, you know, and looked at power wires, cables that were running across the backyard and back into this covered area where they could have found J.C. Dugard literally years before and saved her from that level of victimization. And, you know, some will suggest that's simply a case of overworked officers with too many cases trying to follow up too many leads. Others will say, you know, maybe that was a lazy officer who didn't do his job and caused that woman all that grief. I think that's the reason why California settled so quickly and paid her millions of dollars, because she did have a legitimate claim.
Clint Van Zandt here. We're talking about the hunt for the killer of California teenager Norma Lopez. You can learn more about that by going to Clint's Newsvine site at clintvanzandt.newsvine.com. Forensics, as I started out mentioning, will be a big part of this DNA. It's not like you see on some of the dopey cable shows, but then again, there is part of it. We could talk about transfer and the bones and all that sort of stuff. I'm sure the investigators are working hard on the forensics in this case.
And hopefully that's going to give them some clues. You know, the law enforcement, they need help from the public. They need somebody who saw something or heard something. They even had, you know, a description of this green SUV that was seen leaving the area at a high rate of speed, perhaps with multiple individuals inside. So, you know, they're tracking down vehicles like that. But again, eventually be able to convict somebody, they probably are going to need, as you suggest, physical evidence. They're going to need some type of DNA transfer, hairs, fibers, a cigarette found on the scene with the DNA of someone who had thrown it down, something that will link the killer or killers, because I think there's a good chance there could be multiple, to this victim. And that appears to be the challenge. You know, here many times we hear about kidnappings where there's no body. Well, here they have a body, but now we have to be able to trace it back to the actual killer.
And like you mentioned in your article, worst case scenario, there could be a serial killer out there.
And I think there could, and I think that's what law enforcement has to be concerned with. You know, until you're able to develop some type of physical evidence, some type of MO, something that would allow you to consider the possibility that other nearby or maybe remote missing individuals or even murders could be linked together, that's something law enforcement has to consider. They can't get away from it. And, of course, you know, we're in summertime, and young people are out on their own, and I think this is what is just frightening parents and other caregivers out in that area, is to realize that if it happened to Norma Lopez, it could really happen to anyone.
And when you look at kids today, all you have to do is drive down the street, walk through a mall, go anywhere, Clint, they all have phones. They all have the iPhone, the BlackBerry, and I can't say it enough about Silent Bodyguard because it's a different age today with technology. And I couldn't believe it, seeing a kid riding down the street on his bicycle the other day texting at the same time. Not only dangerous, but it's something that we know is there, and I think parents need to accept that fact but teach their kids that, and not just little ones, but the teenagers too, wives, sisters, brothers, husbands, how important that is. Let's talk a little bit more about Silent Bodyguard. Now, when those that aren't techno-savvy, they'll say, okay, a free app for your iPhone or BlackBerry. What does that mean?
Yeah, it really means you can go to iTunes, or you can go through our website, livesecure.org, and you can download this free application to either your iPhone, like I have it on, and or a BlackBerry, like my wife has it on, and my daughter has it on. You download this application, and once you have it on, it gives you the ability to add either addresses, email addresses, or text message addresses. So if you're in danger, if you feel threatened, you can activate by one button, you can activate that phone in your hand. And one of the new capabilities the developers, and again, you know, this phone was developed by a woman in California who has two daughters. Both of her two daughters have friends who were kidnapped, assaulted, and murdered. And she just wanted to do something about it, and she came up with this wonderful application. And now they've developed a new level of it where you can tell that application to either go into your address book or go into other names and addresses you have and send out multiple messages. But, you know, it's one thing to say, help, I need help, I'm in a threatening situation. It's another when it sends that Google map out, gives the exact geographic location where you're at that second, and every 60 seconds it updates it again. And I only wish, you know, you and I work in cases like that, when we were immediately told someone had disappeared, someone was a victim, if we would have had those coordinates, you know, it's like a LoJack that you can get on a car where police can track that vehicle, except this is far more important. We're talking about human lives and not an automobile.
Absolutely. Clint Van Zandt's here. We're talking about the hunt for the killer of California teenager Norma Lopez. Everyone's going to wonder, you know, we've talked about the possibility of serial killers, gang initiation. How about ex or current boyfriends, Clint?
Well, she's got one boyfriend that we know of. He was described as a on-again, off-again boyfriend, somebody she had a relationship with, may have had it again. But from what I understand, law enforcement has been able to establish an alibi for him at the time she disappeared, and it seems to be a pretty solid alibi, at least as far as it was initially reported. So if we can, in fact, rule him out, then we have to say again, was she a victim of opportunity? Was she in the wrong place at the wrong time when an offender was there looking? Or had she been stalked by a person or persons unknown who were just looking again for that right opportunity? Something like, you know, a shark has a area that they're looking, they're patrolling, they're looking to find a victim. And was she found in that area? And I think that's the frustration for law enforcement is realizing that happened to a citizen, to a, you know, a young woman out there. And again, it could happen again. If somebody can get to Norma Lopez, they can get to anybody, and I think that's that's the fear of all the parents out there in that part of the country.
Another high-profile case you and I have discussed many times, and there was a press conference on it today. Not a lot new, except the reward has been increased to $50,000. And I'm seeing some news articles that people through the Sheriff's Department are saying there is enough probable cause to make an arrest. But as Kyron Horman, I want you to talk a little bit about the difference between what we hear in the public say, well, why haven't they arrested her yet? Why haven't they arrested her yet? The difference between probable cause and proof beyond a reasonable doubt is what you need to convict someone.
Absolutely. Now, I'm going to be on the NBC Today show tomorrow morning at 7:30 Eastern talking about this case and talking about some aspects of it. Now, as you know, this has been a highly covered case, just like the case of Miss Lopez. In the case of Kyron Horman, of course, now he's been missing these oh so many weeks. And in the court of public opinion, his stepmother has already been convicted. I think most people believe that she's told so many variations of stories that her alleged sexual activities with others other than the biological father of her missing son, her alleged attempt to hire a hitman almost 7 months ago now to kill her husband, and just goes on and on. I mean, this woman has shot herself in the foot, it appears, so many times. I'm surprised she even has any toes left on her foot. But I think we're at the point right now where people, I see them on television, I see them writing blogs saying, why don't they just arrest her and put her in jail? Well, to me, Dana, and, you know, from your investigative experience, I see two different cases going on here. Mm-hmm. Number one is the allegation that 7 months ago, 8 months ago, she tried to hire someone who would be a hitman, who would kill her husband, because allegedly she was angry at her husband because he was having some extramarital affair. Well, remember, Terry Harmon was the one who was engaged in an extramarital affair with her current husband, Kane. At the time, his then-wife, Desiree, was pregnant with Kyron. So, I mean, you know, this old ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny, where things kind of repeat themselves and it comes around again.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Terry Harmon is forced to live out something that she perhaps had victimized the mother of Kyron Harmon initially. But, you know, let's set that aside and deal with your question. There appears to be probable cause to believe on one side that she attempted to get a contract against her husband to get him killed, and therefore that's would appear to be a prosecutable offense. And number two are all the inconsistencies that we hear allegedly concerning her and the disappearance of her stepson from the day it happened on and various stories she told, the inability for her to account for her time afterwards or for law enforcement to verify it. Both of those two entirely separate cases need to be investigated on their own, need to be potentially prosecuted on their own. But even in the case of her attempt to have her current husband killed, trying to hire a gardener as a hitman, what good would it serve if the police arrest her right now and put her in jail? I think their whole ploy between the family, the three other members of the family, the biological mother and father, and the Kyron stepfather, who, of course, is a police detective, I think part of what they're trying to do is to keep increased pressure on Terry Harmon, hoping that she will break or make another mistake that will lead them to what happened to Kyron. If she's in jail, that limits her opportunity to do it. Dana, she's not going anywhere.
No.
So there's no reason not to leave her out on the street and give her the chance. You know, it's the old, you give somebody enough rope and they're going to tie themselves up. Hopefully, I think law enforcement and the family hope upon hope that if Terry Harmon had anything to do with the disappearance of her stepson, Kyron, that by leaving her out, by not seeking an arrest warrant at this time, that maybe upon maybe she'll lead them to that young boy, either dead or alive.
Well, and the family hopes that this will be a, well, not with the circumstances, but it will be a Smart or a Dugard case where the child still is alive and being kept somewhere, hopefully not abused, you know, but we don't know. Usually,
and you know, there rests the challenge. You know, you and I and everybody else who's followed this case, we hope this young man is alive. But the question is, if law enforcement has identified all of her friends, you know, they've executed search warrants in three different people's house within the last week. They had this one friend of hers, Dee Dee, before a grand jury, trying to get some type of testimony from her. The issue comes up, who in her circle of friends who would have been close enough to Terry Harmon, should Terry have anything to do with the disappearance of her stepson, who would be close enough to Terry Harmon to hold that child this long period of time and still remain loyal to Terry that law enforcement has not been able to identify through cell phone records, work records, her computers, things like this? Who else is out there that is so close that they would be willing to participate in the kidnapping, and yet so far away that police couldn't identify that person?
Absolutely. It's a story that still has a lot to be told on it. Clint Van Zandt, Silent Bodyguard, the life-saving iPhone and BlackBerry app is free at iTunes or through livesecure.org. Thanks again, my friend.
Dana, always good to be with you. Thank you.
We'll talk soon. Bye-bye. And I'm not a big technological phone guy. I can work my way through a computer do shows like this, if you can call it a show. But when it comes to the safety of your loved ones, everyone's got a phone in their hand today, except me. And they're texting and they're doing whatever. Check it out. It's Silent Bodyguard. It's free at iTunes or livesecure.org. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Florida newsman Mark Williams. You see Mark all the time on Nancy Gray Show to get some updates. What's been going on with the Casey and Kaylee Anthony case? There's another case that I don't know if we'll ever know the real story. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. It's been a while since my next guest has been with us, but you all know Mark Williams, Florida newsman, someone who is a who just hung up on me, someone who is a regular on the Nancy Gray Show, and obviously we lost phone connection for some reason. I had him there, unless I hit the wrong button, and he'll phone back in just a second. But we're going to get an update on what's been going on with Casey Anthony and Jose Baez and his bad memory and all that. Can Jose Baez actually say that he didn't realize he was being recorded when he talked to a prisoner? You know, we haven't heard a whole lot. We've heard that the defense has come forward and have been talking about George. Some of the blogs have said that they're even going to try and blame George for this whole disaster. I don't know. Again, there's only one true victim in this case. That's Kaylee Anthony, and justice will be served. Will her mother, Casey, be found guilty? Time will tell for sure. We'll take a quick break. I'll get Mark Williams back on the air here. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio.
The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio will be right back.
Jessica.
Hi, Mrs. Johnson. Is Megan there?
Sure. Follow me. The kids are in the kitchen making sandwiches.
Hey, Julie.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Megan. Hey, Megan.
Yeah?
You're a total freak. God, you're ugly. And dumb. Oh, and your makeup makes you look like a tramp.
Oh, my God.
Tommy Morris told me you guys made out.
Okay, well, we're right back. Mark Williams is here. Again, I was introducing him as a Florida newsman, someone who has been a regular on the Nancy Gray Show talking about the Casey and Kaylee Anthony case, and then the phone went dead. And I just told Mark, I said, it must be the squirrel that runs on the wheel for the Canadian phone system. Had to stop and take a drink, Mark.
Well, that happens. We have the same thing down here, except they're gators.
Yeah, they're big alligators.
On a tread wheel, and they must have found a little dog that they just gobbled up. That's all I can say.
Listen, I got to just go off topic with Kaylee Anthony and Casey Anthony for a second here. There's a reality show now. It's not Florida, but it's out of Louisiana, I believe, called Billy the Exterminator. Have you seen that on A&E?
No, I can't say that I have, but nothing surprises me anymore on the television cable channels.
And I see that it's about an exterminator in Louisiana who goes from home to home, and a lot of times he's going to pick gators and snakes out of people's houses. Is it like that in Florida?
Yeah, as a matter of fact. I sit here and listen to Animal Services on our 800 megahertz system here in Brevard County, Florida. And the deal is they sometimes have to call trappers out to get a gator. And I've seen gators literally walk across roads. Now, with turtles, turtle mating season sometimes, they go across the road. I stop and I pick up the turtle and I move said turtle because I don't want to see anything happen with the poor defenseless little creatures, and a two-ton car can really cause a lot of damage.
Yeah, especially at mating season for a turtle. They go so slow anyway, you don't want to interrupt anything, and if you can help them out a little bit, that's a decent thing to do. In fact, that's a new reality show. It could be Mark Williams and the Turtles or something. No, never mind. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I can use some FaceTime every now and again.
Let's pitch that to A&E. Listen, let's get into Casey Anthony. Jose Baez seems to have had, he needs to take, what's that herb, ginkgo biloba, to get his memory back. He can't seem to remember the fact that he was told that when you talk to a prisoner in jail, you'll probably be recorded. What's going on there?
Well, you and I know that to a lot of people, Jose Baez, the defense attorney for Casey Anthony, is nothing more than a putz. He was lucky that she selected that he was on Wheel of Fortune one night,
yeah.
And she, in the holding tank, she said after her arrest, "I'm in trouble. Who should I call?" And they said Jose Baez.
Yeah,
prosecutors are accusing Baez, the defense attorney, of having a faulty memory and making simply untrue claims about recorded phone calls with a prison inmate. Baez talked to a state prison inmate by the name of Robin Lunsford. He wants that phone call sealed. He says that he didn't know his call was being recorded. Everything is recorded in this state, and then it's released. The filing by prosecutors also provide details to the recorded call. Now, Dana, if you recall, Lunsford is a convicted career criminal.
Yep.
She allegedly claimed to have information that she and two other inmates conspired to make up false information about Anthony while they were prisoners in the inmates in the Orange County Jail. Prosecutors, of course, arguing that Baez has no right to claim that these calls are confidential attorney-client work product, and there's no right to privacy here.
Baez, and we said the used the term putz as lovingly, I'm sure. This guy has stepped in it more times than you can shake a stick at, and why you'd shake a stick at something you step in, I don't know. The high-profile lawyers that he's got on this team, the media that he loves to hate but loves to be on, and now we're even hearing Mark Williams is that they're checking into George somewhat. The blame game has gone full circle with Casey Anthony, and now she's starting to point the finger at her father.
Well, she's always she contends that her father tried to sexually abuse her. Okay, who knows? There's always been a report that brother Lee Anthony had tried to do the nasty with her at one time. You know, this is a very dysfunctional family, and for the past 2 years. We have watched this family unfold in front of our eyes. We don't know what is true until the trial takes place in May of 2011. And if and when George Anthony is called to the stand, all these things will come out, because the prosecution and the defense will all have very riveting questions for the entire Anthony family. And if they're under oath, which they will be, they can't back down. They've allegedly got to tell the truth, or they perjure themselves and end up in the slammer as well.
Yeah, we all sit back, Mark, and in these high-profile cases, we look at the family. We look at the family of the accused. We look at the family of the victim. And at the start, we all seem to have some sympathy for George and Cindy Anthony, and I'm going to say at the very early start. And then we started to see the video of them turning the water hose on the protesters out in front of their house. Of course, the famous deposition video, Cindy Anthony losing her cool, and of course the 911 calls that they're trying to manipulate and dodge around that 911 call, you know, the body or the car smells like a damn dead body or whatever that I'm paraphrasing. When this does go to trial, Mark, and they do get on the stand, it's going to be a little different in a criminal murder case than just a deposition. Cindy and George Anthony aren't going to be able to play that that crazy chip on their shoulder role, or they'll end up in jail for contempt.
Well, and that's it. First off, the judge will allow that 1911 call that we all know and love. And you said, you know, it smells like there's a dead body in the back of the damn car.
Yeah.
Cindy Anthony has always claimed that she said that because she wanted sheriff's deputies there quicker than what they would normally respond. She's been a medical professional for the past 30 years. She knows what a dead body smells like. She went through this with her nurse training. Okay? The deal is she knew exactly what she was saying when she uttered those words. They will be admitted into evidence. And the other thing is the fact that if Judge Belvin Perry, who's a no-nonsense judge and who I really, really, really like, if he didn't admit that in, it still would have come out in testimony, because that is the most famous line of this entire case, Dana.
The cast of characters, Mark Williams. Mark Williams is here, Florida newsman, someone who you see quite regularly on the Nancy Grace Show talking about the Casey Anthony case. The cast of characters in this story, this tragedy, took away somewhat from the big picture, the poor little girl that died and trying to find out who is responsible. The bounty hunters, the people at bail, the meter reader, you name it. But one thing that we can say, at least I can say, is that the law enforcement that investigated this case, because we see a lot of negativity thrown towards law enforcement in high-profile cases, I think they did a damn good job.
You know, and Yuri Melishers is the lead guy on this, is the lead detective, Orange County detective on this case. And I think he did an excellent job as well. There have been some curmudgeons in the case, such as people tweeting and texting things that all they know that shouldn't have never been released.
Right.
So Melish, I think, was hampered in his efforts, and this is no slam against anybody, by the media, by the bounty hunter, Leonard Padilla, and people like that. It's in my heart of hearts, I still think that Cindy Anthony should be in jail, in a cell, general population cell, away from her daughter, because she has impeded this investigation tremendously. I think they all have, but Cindy Anthony in particular, when she came out and said, "Oh no, it was just a box of bad pizza in the back of the car," that's BS. And the deal is that she has lied. She has given them bad evidence from the very get go, and she should be brought up on charges. She should be part of this conspiracy.
Someone who's been in the media as long as you have, and covered and reported on and seen many, many stories like this, this story is far from over. When the trial does come, and Florida has a unique way of just with the discovery covering these stations or these stories, the news stations, when this does happen, Mark, will be just going absolutely crazy. What do you expect when this trial does start?
Well, you know, bring in Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey, park them on a siding in downtown Orlando, bring in the elephants, because this is going to be probably one of the most highly covered trials since the O.J. trial. And I'm being quite serious when I say this.
I agree.
Bias has brought in his litany of defense experts, okay? The only one who won't be there is Andrea Lyon from DePaul University. She has she has written her book and bowed out of this deal, okay, because I think she knows that this thing is hopeless after looking at some of the evidence. Florida is a very unique state, Dana, is where they release discovery to the media and to the general public. I sit here and I you know, on the day of the release, I can go to any website and or request anything that I need, and boom, I get it. And it's really amazing how the state of Florida, in its court proceedings, do things in the open. And this is how it should be all over the country. But no, you're going to have satellite trucks parked from here to the new Amway Arena, and reporters in town, and the communications infrastructure is going to be taxed. There's no doubt about it.
Has the media covered this case professionally, where we've seen the Anthonys do their media tour? We saw the early coverage. You did a lot of coverage on Nancy Grace. There seemed to be those involved that wanted to get their 15 seconds or 15 minutes of fame and then get turned around. And there were a lot of other cases out there that weren't being covered when this one was being covered over and over and over again. A lot of criticism about that. I'm just curious about your thoughts, because it is an important story. And of course, in this game, you want to get the listeners, you want to get the viewers, you want to get whatever. But was there too much coverage after a while in this case?
You know, sometimes it's overkill, and I sometimes agree with that, but it's a very compelling story.
Yeah.
You have a 24-year-old woman who allegedly killed her 2-year-old daughter. You know, the evidence is pointing to chloroform, tape across the mouth and around the head, left her literally to die in an area close to her home, went partying. I mean, we have sex, lies, and videotape. That's mm-hmm. what it comes down to. This story has been criticized, Dana, because there are other missing people or other children who have turned up dead. And I'm talking about African-Americans that have gone missing, and they don't get the coverage that this does. I hate to say this, this is a sexy case. This is a case made for all the cable news channels. It's made for local television in the Orlando area. The person who has done the best job, from what I could gather, is Kathy Belich from Channel 9, WFTV,
yes,
here in Orlando. She has just done a bang-up job. She's asked the correct questions. I mean, during these perp walks, I mean, they tell you when these perp walks are going to take place. When she was released from jail the first time and hiding under Baez's umbrella, Kathy sticks a microphone in her face and says, "Did you kill Kaylee?"
Mm-hmm.
That was the story right there.
Yep. Yep.
She came out, she put it on the line, and she has been criticized for her reporting. Now, here's another thing, if I can get. Chaney Mason is an attorney for Baez. Yep. Chaney's a retired attorney, has a great reputation in the Orlando area, and he says, "We're going to get her free. She's innocent." Well, he started taking pot shots at Belich a couple of weeks ago. She was asking the correct questions during her job, and Mason has turned out to be a putz as well. He's just become a puppet to Mr. Baez and his ilk.
Well, you know that the defense attorneys are struggling and are losing their case when they start complaining about the media and not concentrating on what they can do to defend their client. I think it's just that simple.
And I agree. The evidence, even the circumstantial evidence, is overwhelming in this case against Casey Anthony. And reporter Belich, when all the other reporters stopped at the door, she went on the inside with her photographer and kept hammering away at this old guy with a beard, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And just putting his butt up against the wall. And he went ballistic. It was not the Chaney Mason that I've known, seen, and loved in action over the past couple of years back in the mid-90s. He has lost his edge.
Well, and that can happen. And when you start criticizing the media, you're taking away from the big picture here. And the big picture here, Mark Williams, and I'll give you the last word in a second, is that poor Kaylee Anthony lost her life. Her mother is in jail accused of her murder. Will she be found guilty? Won't she be found guilty? I'll give you that last word.
Well, it's tough to say. This trial is going to be as big probably the second largest trial behind O.J. because of all the interest over the past couple of years. And I don't say that lightly by any stretch of the imagination. You're going to have court TV in this town, gavel-to-gavel coverage. You're going to have the pool reporting that goes on all the television stations. Even the one cable news outlet here in town, Central Florida News 13, I would suspect to say that they will cover this gavel to gavel, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. One plug, if I may, for my website. I have a website here along the East Coast, along the Space Coast of Florida, called HalifaxAreaNewsWatch.com. We have the Halifax River that runs through Daytona Beach, and that's a website I started about a year ago. And I know I've had your support on that, and things are just going along fine. And, you know, you want to know news of the Daytona Beach area, HalifaxAreaNewsWatch.com. Also, all the latest updates on the Anthony affair.
Absolutely. Mark Williams, thank you. I'm sure we'll be talking more about this case as the months and days go by.
Can't wait for it, Dana. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. That's Mark Williams. You can see him on Nancy Grace and other cable news shows talking about Casey Anthony. And will she be found guilty of the murder of Kaylee Anthony? Time will tell, and a jury will tell. And my name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. When I got this email, and it was titled Hardcore Pornography, gee, I can't speak properly, coming to primetime TV, I thought, what? You know, right now the media situation, the way that it is with the internet and actually television, cable, satellite, no matter what it is, the hardcore pornography is running rampant, and we talk about kids and morality and all that sort of stuff. But when I saw this article, and I'm going to share a little bit of it with you here right now, it says, are we on the threshold of seeing hardcore porn on primetime TV? Very possibly so, if we follow the logic of New York Post columnist Jacob Solomon. And I thought, okay, this is enough of this. It says, on July 24th, 2010, in a column entitled The Trouble with Outlawing Porn, Solomon supported two recent federal court decisions, one of which invalidated the FCC broadcast indecency in law enforcement policy, and the other which dismissed obscenity charges against a commercial distributor of hardcore pornography. So I thought, okay, we got to get the real scoop on this. I went to the internet and I emailed my friend Robert Peters. Bob is the president of Morality and Media, and he's out of New York. You can check out his webpage. There's a link in the show notes, or go to moralityinmedia.org. Hi, Bob. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Dana. Thanks for having me back.
You know, I stumbled through that introduction a little bit, but it actually makes me angry to see this with the scourge of pornography the way that it is right now with the internet, television, pay-per-view, movies. I don't think there is such thing as a G-movie anymore. It just drives me nuts. And with this article, I thought I'd better bring you on to try and clarify what's going on.
Well, the what prompted my release was an article that appeared in the New York Post. I'm pretty sure that the columnist is syndicated nationally, so I assume it appeared in other newspapers around the country and on the web. And you know, I've seen articles by Jacob Sulum, probably killing his last name, it's S-U-L-L-U-M, before. And, you know, he's a well-meant guy, but very libertarian. And, you know, kind of the idea that when it comes to morality, you know, that's all, you know, up to the individual. Government doesn't really have any role to play in protecting the moral fabric of society. And for the most part, even in protecting children, it's up to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
But in effect, he was making the argument that both the indecency concept and the obscenity concept can never be defined sufficiently to pass constitutional muster. In other words, they are just inherently vague. And there's a grain of truth in that last statement. You know, indecency, obscenity have never been defined with, you know, total precision. There have always been subjective judgments that had to be made. And that is problematic. But as the Supreme Court, in one of its morally lucid moments, pointed out decades ago, that if we accept this argument that the only way a law regulating speech can be constitutional is if it defines the speech with godlike precision, you know, just absolute certainty, so you know what is or isn't prohibited, then nothing can be regulated in terms of pornography. And you know, Sulem's talking kind of, you know, he probably thinks that, you know, when it comes to consenting adults, you know, anything should go. But he made the argument that if the definitions aren't adequate, then you can't regulate it at all. So I made the point, well, if you can't regulate it at all, then the obscene, in my opinion, obscene material that was at issue in another case that this gentleman supported, that type of material, which involved defecation, enemas, urination, violent bondage, among other things, that could be shown literally on the Family Hour, because constitutionally you can never define the term obscene or indecent to be satisfactory to the court, therefore it's legal. And you know, I suspect that Mr. Sulem didn't fully think through the implications of what he was saying, but that is the practical result. If you can't define it sufficiently to pass constitutional muster because the concepts are inherently vague, then there's no regulation, and you can air it on the Family Hour.
Well, I think
hardcore pornography, defecation, urination, torture, bestiality, you name it, you can air it on the Family Hour.
Well, I think his argument is weak, and we'll get into the First Amendment here in a second. Bob Peters is here. He's the president of Morality and Media. I know I butchered the man's name too, Suleiman, however we say it, doesn't matter. But when it comes down to that, and I want to get into the Supreme Court decision that you talked about from 1973, I believe, Miller versus California. When we look at that ruling, And the whole thing about consenting adults, what you mentioned a while back is the government, the libertarians will say the government has no role in regulating this. It should be up to the parents. But, Bob, we all know that if we had good parents that were out there to regulate things like this and to monitor things like this, we wouldn't have the problem. Sadly, there's a lot of kids out there that just don't have good parents.
Oh, very much so. I mean, we could all wish that every child had two parents to begin with, and a growing number of children in America don't have the benefit of two parents. They have the benefit of one parent, and oftentimes that parent works. In other cases, that parent has problems of her own or his own. And clearly, I wrote a paper on this not too long ago showing, you know, I just came up with a list of reasons, practical reasons, why many parents are never going to do what the libertarians and the liberals think good parents should do. And those reasons include the parent doesn't speak English. There are many people in them. And I grew up in an ethnic community, and I can still remember peddling papers to the grandparents of the kids I grew up with who came from Italy, and they did not speak English. That's reality. It's always been reality. It always will. So we have many parents that do not speak English. They can't keep up with what the kids are doing. I happen to see an article within the last few months that, you know, over 1 million New Yorkers are functionally illiterate. You know, these many parents can't read. I mean, one could fault them, but, you know, I mean, parents are illiterate for many reasons. Then there's the problem of, again, articles where, you know, and this close to 2 million kids where they are the caretaker of their parent. You know, their parents are physically or mentally disabled. The children have to take care of them.
Right.
And, of course, we all know that there are parents that, for one reason or another, just don't do what we all wish they would do. In some cases, they don't care about their kids. In other cases, they're naive. In other cases, they have so many problems of their own that they can't take care of themselves, let alone their kids. This is reality. I'm not trying to get parents off the hook. But my argument, and I can be awfully stubborn sometimes, is that the job of raising children, I mean, we all agree the primary job falls on the shoulders of parents.
Right.
But parents need the support of society.
Yep.
And what increasingly is happening in America, and I suspect in Europe too, is that in large measure too, because of court decisions, society is no longer supporting parents in this you know, job of raising the kids. It's all being put on the backs of parents. Many parents do a great job, but I think the statistics and the news stories and a lot of other evidence indicates that a lot of parents are failing to do the job that that needs to be done. And they're failing in part because society is at war with what they are trying to do. Instead of supporting them, our culture undermines what parents are trying to do.
And there's this whole era of political correctness and the young people that look at the role models. Let's look at Lindsay Lohan for a second here. Media, speaking of covering stories, nonstop coverage of this. I consider her a C actress at best, but someone with a potential for a serious addictions problem, maybe going down the same road as other Hollywood stars. But when you look at media, Bob, and young girls, for example, and young people idolizing Lindsay Lohan, here we have Lindsay Lohan, who's supposed to be some sort of role model, in jail right now, and when she comes out, she'll be doing a movie based on the life of Linda Lovelace. Is this whole political correctness, media scourge that we have such an obsession with these young people? Are the people not looking at the big picture? I wouldn't want my 13-year-old daughter, and we know they're going to try and watch it. If they don't find it on the internet somewhere, they're going to sneak in somewhere, see it. Just because it's Lindsay Lohan looking at a movie about her playing Linda Lovelace?
Well, I tell you one thing about these childhood stars, and I don't know if there's a consensus among the powers that be in the entertainment media, but it just seems almost without fail that when a childhood star, innocent can be, at least, you know, in terms of the camera and what we know of her public life or his public life, but they get to a certain age where clearly they can't. You know, they're getting older. They're no longer children, you know, certainly not young children. They're in their teens. They're growing up. And clearly, you know, there need to be some, you know, the parts that they play in whatever role it is have to change. But it seems that, you know, whether it's Lindsay Lohan or Miley Cyrus or, gosh, who was the one that shipwrecked, she had with kids and, you know, she lost the kids to her husband.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Britney Spears.
That's it. Yep.
And then Christina Aguilera.
Yep.
And I bet you could just go down the line of, you know, these childhood stars and all the kids are looking up to them and they get a little older and somebody basically decides that it's time that they begin to make the transition into, you know, older adulthood, you know. And how do we do that? Well, you either take off your clothes or you take off a significant amount of your clothes or you start dressing like a hooker or you start dancing like a hooker in an MTV, you know, type music video. And this is, and even the boys, the guy with the little Potter guy that starred in the, you know, his way of announcing that he was now an adult was to star in Equus, which is, I'd never seen it, don't want to see it. I assume it, you know, from a theatrical perspective, it's a serious, theatrical performance. But there's a lot of nudity in it, and that's how this young man announced that he was an adult. I'm assuming that there are people in the business. This is the advice that these kids and their parents are getting. You know, your child can't stay a childhood star. She's going to be in that teenage period, going to be an adult sooner than later.
Yeah.
And we've got to begin to make a transition. And the way you begin to make a transition, Dakota Fanning, you know, starring in a rape movie would be another one. And she just starred in a druggie movie. Yeah. You know, she was a childhood star. It's just unbelievable, you know, where how the transition is made in entertainment from childhood star to more mature star. You know, you do drugs, you do nudity, you do sex, and this announces to the world that you're an adult.
Yeah,
God help us.
I can't understand it. Lady Gaga running around in her underwear, and I think somebody asked O'Reilly last night if he'd go to a Mets game in his underwear to get some publicity, and he said no, he'd send Glenn Beck instead. But it's incredible to see this. this. And I know I've asked you this question before, Bob, is the Internet. I'm not one who supports regulation of the Internet, but then on the other hand, I'm one who supports outlawing pornography from the Internet. It does nobody any good. It's all it does is it attracts the lowlifes of the world, the predators, the stalkers, the you name it out there, and people will look at me and say, you're nuts, that'll never happen, and that's probably true. But when will we ever see regulation to protect our kids? And I'm talking about the parents who let their kids be raised by the Internet, who are constantly on the Internet, and that's not just the computer anymore, that's the BlackBerry and the whatever other kind of phone that you have. I don't know a difference between a BlackBerry and a Raspberry, but it's all out there, it's available. So when we're talking about porn coming to primetime TV, and sadly it may someday, it's already out there 24 hours a day on the Internet.
Well, I tell you, our nation's own Supreme Court, I think, personally, that I think set the trend. And, the common sense thing to do, at bare minimum, with entertainment or content on the Internet that is clearly not suitable for children, and certainly the vast majority of adults would agree, this is not for kids, would be to say to the people who provide this content on the Internet, you need to take one of these steps to keep the kids away. Now, we're all in agreement these aren't going to be perfect, so parents still have a job to do, but you're either going to have to require a credit card, or there's going to have to be some membership process by which, an identification is provided, ideally checked up. Somebody proposed to me, there are ways where age verification wouldn't be perfect, but it would most assuredly cut down on kids' access to pornography, whatever it would be, drugs, violence, I don't know, boy, there's making bombs, that, mm-hmm. If anybody, we had any sense, that would be prohibited for everyone. But at bare minimum, we'd have age verification requirements, but our all-wise and knowing Supreme Court has ruled a couple of times now that would put a burden on adults who want to see bestiality and women tortured and raped in porno, and to see, a woman have sex with 27 guys and four of them at the same time. We can't burden in any way the right of adults to, I'm being sarcastic here, I hope you know, to see this thing. We can't even burden them to the extent of saying that, you're going to have to prove that you're an adult, and there are various ways that can be done, or use a credit card to get at, et cetera, et cetera. So basically what we have on the Internet now is not only an essential lawlessness, all sorts of things on the Internet that clearly can hurt, do hurt people, but we don't even keep the kids away from it. But until, part of my answer would be, until we, the American people, have enough sense to elect a president and a majority of members of Congress who will do something about the makeup of the Supreme Court, and or we have a constitutional convention to put the Supreme Court in its proper place, which is not governed being the supreme branch of government. It's just supposed to be the Supreme Court, not the supreme branch of government, which it really has become. Everything ultimately is, the Supreme Court supposedly has the final say. But, I tell you, I don't know, one of two ways. We've either got to get judges that understand their proper limits. We don't have that type of court today. Or we've got to have a constitutional convention and put these people in their place and make it clear, what the Constitution doesn't protect, what it does, and spell out with some detail what the proper role of the Supreme Court is. I'm not trying to, turn the Supreme Court into a rubber stamp for Congress or the President, but I don't believe the Supreme Court's supposed to be the supreme branch of government.
Yeah, for sure. I couldn't agree more. Morality and media works to inform citizens and public officials about the harms of pornography and what they can do through law to protect their communities and children. And Robert Peters is the president of Morality and Media. Bob, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dan. Have a great day.
Talk to you again. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
And that's Bob Peters with Morality and Media. Will we see hardcore porn coming to primetime TV, unregulated? Yeah, I hate to say it, but yeah, we probably will. And, up here in Canada, all you got to do, the regulation's a little bit different. Some of the crap that's on is, whatever. But I hearken back to my youth in the 1960s and early 70s when television was television. I'm Dana Pritzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are right back. And yeah, I just want to add a little something. The organization called the CRTC, the Canadian Radio and Television Commission. Yeah, Canadian Radio Television Commission that regulates what you can watch, what you can't watch on Canadian television. That and a bunch of those that worry about Canadian content say that you can't watch American television in Canada legally. Believe it or not, it's illegal to have a satellite dish in Canada and pay for it. I'm not talking about piracy, but pay for it and watch a channel, say, like Showtime. Yet they will allow shows like the Trailer Park Boys, Uncensored, South Park, pornography, stuff that just would make your hair stand on end at all times during the day. And I don't get it. Yes, the airwaves should be free and people can always turn in the channel, but when pornography is going to be something that you can just turn on, not have to subscribe to, and anybody can watch it at any time, we're just asking for trouble. That's it. That's the night show. I hope you enjoyed it. My name's Dana Pritzer. You can find more on our website at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live, pick up podcasts of past shows, listen to the daily commentary, leave comments, whatever. It's always a pleasure, and we'll see you again real soon here on the Dana Pritzer Show.
Been listening to the Dana Pritzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.